Manny Pacheco, and welcome to Forgotten Hollywood. I've written a paperback that shares America's story, our story from folks of Hollywood's golden age. Joining me today is the radio columnist from the Orange County Register and my pal, Gary Lycan. I'm extraordinarily proud to welcome the gentleman that has enjoyed a seven-decade career as a radio announcer, songwriter, record producer, and station owner, and the person who first coined the term oldies but goodies. This broadcast pioneer also foresaw the rise and growth of the Hispanic community throughout the United States decades ago. On a personal note, he's my mentor, who first hired me at 1110 KRLA while I was still in college. I'm thrilled to call him my close friend, Art LeBeau. Well, Art, you're best known for introducing pop and R&B music on the West Coast, and I recently discovered you had a passion for Hollywood's golden age.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was there, you know.
Who were some of your favorite actors in movies when you were growing up in Salt Lake City?
Oh, when I was in Salt Lake City, I was only 9 years old, so I was watching Westerns, you know, Saturday afternoon serials and things like that. I wasn't watching any major movies.
You liked those early morning serials then?
Yeah, you know, the Saturday afternoon Westerns.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about, because when you moved to Hollywood, you were really influential in developing the relationship of noted stars who became rock and roll stars who appeared in movies. People like Rick Nelson and Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard and the Flamingos and Chuck Berry.
Yeah, I didn't really get them in the movies. They got themselves in, but, you know, helped some of them get started, Ricky Nelson especially, and some of the others that you mentioned, playing their stuff here, you know, on the West Coast first, until everybody else caught on and started doing it.
Let's enjoy the magic of the mid-50s when youthful influences were featured in motion pictures. Here are the Flamingos, as heard from the Hal Roach production of Go, Johnny, Go on Forgotten Hollywood.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you. Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright.
A garden.
my mind. Come on, come on. Maybe millions of people come on, come on. Go by.
You found us on Forgotten Hollywood. Let's check in with my two very close friends, Gary Lycan, and our special guest, Art LeBeau.
Well, Art, this is Gary. You know, some of your favorite films I know were made at Warner Brothers, 42nd Street, The Roaring Twenties, High Sierra. Talk a little bit about, you know, Busby Berkeley, James Cagney, Humphrey Bogart, and Max Steiner.
Yeah, I love them. I love those movies, and that's my favorite era. You know, the late 40s and the like 1939, 40, 41, all the way up to 1950. The golden years of Hollywood were still going, but as far as the movie stars are concerned, I had my first contact with them in Palm Springs on my second radio job, which was right after I got out of the service, which would be 1947. And Palm Springs was a village then and still had tons of, you know, movie stars that hung out there. And even after that, like I mentioned to you one day that I believe I mentioned it in my notes that I was a big Alan Ladd fan. He happened to live in Palm Springs and he had a hardware store there, Alan Ladd Hardware, for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 50s. And one of my favorite films is Shane. Unfortunately, I never had a chance to meet Alan Ladd. He wasn't selling hardware in his store. That had his name on it. His family ran it. He lived there, but I never had a chance to meet him.
Well, I know you mentioned earlier about some of the Westerns and the Saturday morning serials and so forth. I'm a fan of those, too. You know, I go back to, like, Ken Maynard, Hoot Gibson, and a lot of those Western stars. But specifically, what intrigued you about Shane? What made Shane so special for you?
I don't know. When it first came out, I saw it, and I kind of got connected more to it later, after I got a video of it and played it, and the music and everything. And I've read some of the story about it. When I understood that the movie was made and Paramount thought it was a stiff and put it on the shelf for 2 years.
Wow.
And then released it in 1954, and it became one of their, you know, really big movies. But they really didn't release it when it was done. The source I was reading was, I think I was getting it off a computer, but it sounded logical. I've never heard anyone say anything different.
But it had such great actors in it. I mean, Gene Arthur and Jack Palance and Brandon DeWilde and, of course, Alan Ladd. I mean, really, it's considered the movie, the Western of the 1950s.
Yeah. Actually, that was Gene Arthur's last movie.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
She quit making movies after that.
And let's break away from our memorable interview with Art LeBeau to showcase the great music from Shane on Forgotten Hollywood.
Bye, little Joe.
This is Art LeBeau on Forgotten Hollywood.
Hey, ball fan, can't you hear me when I come? Hey, ball fan, can't you hear me when I come? Well, you ain't so big, you just talk. Waking, bald man, waking around the fire. I want a little rain or water, but you won't let Jimmy start. Big bald man, can't you hear me when I call? Well, you ain't so big, you just talk.
His relationship with Frank Sinatra. This is Forgotten Hollywood. I'm Manny Pacheco. Let's return to our conversation with our special guest. Who are some of the big stars you met in Palm Springs?
Well, the ones that, if they walked in the room, would say hi, Art. I don't figure I know anybody unless they do that. But Frank, I say, if I shook hands with a star, I wouldn't say I knew him. But Frank Sinatra became a close friend. He lived there, and his career was not doing very well in 1947. He had just left the Dorsey Band. He lost his CBS contract, and he hadn't made From Here to Eternity yet. So he lived in Palm Springs, and he listened to the only station there, and I was on it. And it's interesting the way I met him, if you want to hear it.
Sure, sure. We'd love to.
I was doing a radiothon for the Palm Springs Community Hospital, which had been taken over by the Army during the war, and then they turned it into a hospital again, and it wasn't doing well. It was going broke. And so I asked the manager of a station if I could do a radiothon and go on the air, and he thought about it a while, and he said, well, you sure you can do it? And I said, yeah, I can do it. So I went out and did a lot of swimming and got into shape. I was 21 years old. And so I did this radiothon, Art As Long As He Lasts, LeBeau.
I love it.
I was on for 120 hours, and in the breaks, on the CBS breaks during the day, I would come in just long enough between the network soap operas and all, say, this is Art As Long As He Lasts, LeBeau, in my, 99th hour or whatever. And it gathered a lot of momentum. And I think I raised something like under $20,000, but the movie stars caught on to it, Clark Gable and a few others, and they got behind it, and they wound up raising over $1 million. I don't know what they raised, but they got onto this thing. It became a whole national thing, and it saved the Palm Springs Community Hospital.
Well, $20,000 was a lot of money back then, right?
Well, it was, and we had a lot of very rich people there. I mean, when I first got to Palm Springs, I'm driving down the street and I see on the mailboxes, which they had in those days, I'd see Dodge and I'd see, Giannini, which is the president of the Bank of America, who started the Bank of America, and Blatt's, which was Blatt's beer. And I said to the station manager, you know those names, Kellogg, I said, are those the people? He said, yeah, they are. The people that really live there.
Well, how did Frank meet you? Did he call into your show? Or
no, he had written me a letter and sent me some records.
Okay.
And just sent them to the station and thanked me for playing his stuff, which I'd been doing because I knew he lived there. But this day after I finished my radiothon, I went to the movies on a Sunday night at the Plaza Theater. And I was walking out of the movie, and I had a tap on my shoulder. And I turned around, and he said, I'm Frank Sinatra. He got that far. I said, well, I know who you are. So he introduced himself to me. And, of course, I interrupted him and said, yeah, I know who you are. And he said, thanks for playing all my stuff. It's a hell of a thing, he said, you did for the Palm Springs Community Chest and the hospital. You saved the hospital. And we talked for a minute. And then I saw him around town after that, and he would always say hi to me. One day I was getting gas at the gas station, and he was strolling down the street with Ava Gardner, and they were about, 50 or 100 feet from me, and he spotted me, and he left her standing on the sidewalk and ran over to say hello to me, and I saw her over there, and I could see her kind of folding her arms and thinking, why did he leave me to go over and talk to that little guy? But he did. And, he said, hi, Art, how are you? I want to come over and say hello. And then he just said hi and shook hands. And then he went back. And I saw him a couple of other times on New Year's Eve at the Dollhouse. I was emceeing something there for the people that owned the Dollhouse. We were on the air on the local station. And he was there. And I talked to him about going on tour with him to be a promotion guy for him. He said, well, come on over to the house and we'll talk about it. And he says, so the next day I went over to his house and he had a sign on in the front of the house. It was like a little doorbell or, talk back. And I had a little sign on the top of it. It said, if you ring this bell, you better have it. If you haven't been invited and you ring this bell, you better have a damn good reason.
That's funny.
That's great.
So I rang the bell, and his voice came on, and I said, it's Art LeBeau, and I heard boot, and the gate opened, and I went in, and there he was by himself in the house, and he was so skinny in those days. I mean, he was really skinny, and he was wearing a pair of trunks, and that's all I remember. He was cooking breakfast. And he said, do you want some eggs? And I said, yeah, okay. And I had a six-pack of beer. I wanted to take something. It's a little early for beer, Art. And I said, well, put them in the refrigerator. So he said, do you want some eggs? And he was cooking. And I said, are you by yourself? He said, yeah. And I said, yeah. And so Frank Sinatra cooked me breakfast.
Wow. That's a great story.
That is a fabulous story, Art.
And I saw him many times after that. And I'll just say one more time. It was about at least 10 years later, I'd long before left. Oh, by the way, when we talked about, I said, I'd be a good promotion man because I'm a disc jockey. I know how disc jockeys think. And when I'd go ahead of you in these towns and talk to the disc jockeys and so, get some more publicity and give away tickets. He said, yeah, I think you could do that. But he says, I'm not going to let you do it because the tour is only 6 weeks. So what are you going to do after that? I said, I don't know. I'll do something. He says, I know, but that would be as long as you'd be working for me. I said, well, I don't know. I'd do something. No, you got a really good gig here. You're going to go places. I'm not going to let you do it. So he didn't. But I saw him many times after that. I saw him in the 50s. He was pulled up in his car and in those days, he'd already made From Here to Eternity. He was a big star in it by then. And he never looked up. He would always get out of his car. He had a Carmen Ghia, I remember, with the doors.
Oh, yeah.
And he would put his hands in his pockets. He always did that. Never looked left or right. just walk straight ahead so that he wouldn't catch anybody's eye or they wouldn't catch his. And he happened to pass right by me. I was waiting for my car, and he must have passed within a foot of me. And he didn't see me because the head was down. And I just kind of hissed in his ear. I said, "How's your memory?" And he went on by, and he went in the place. And about 20 seconds later, he came out. And he says, "Art," he says, "I just had to come out and say, who would say that to me?" Because he says, "I knew it wasn't just a plain fan." Because it wasn't the kind of thing, you know, that a fan would say to a celebrity. And he thought, he came out. It wasn't like him to do that.
Wow, wow.
He just said hello. He said, "You coming in?" And I said, "No, I'm just leaving."
You have some great memories of Frank Sinatra. Wow.
He was, you know, probably the biggest star that I really knew on a first-name basis. I knew some others, but he was probably the main one.
Fabulous stories from Art LeBeau about Sinatra. Hey, let's listen to a memorable duet from Sinatra and Elvis, which appeared on live television for you on Forgotten Hollywood.
Oh, I don't know. You do witchcraft, okay? And I'll do one of the other ones. Okay? Hey, Nelson? We work in the same way, only in different areas.
Love me tender, love me sweet. Never let me go. You have made my life complete, and I love you so.
Those fingers in my hair, fly from hither stare. That strips my conscience bare. It's no wish fair.
Love me tender, love me true. All my dreams fulfill.
Marlon Brando as Zapata, the tiger who blasted a continent. Gene Peters as the beauty whose heart he captured. Anthony Quinn and a cast of thousands.
I took their wives, too. Huerta's forces are coming through the pass, Emiliano.
Emiliano, I give you my word. I will stop the troops.
I hope so, but if you can't, I will.
Favorite Marlon Brando film is Viva Zapata.
Oh, yes.
How come?
I just think the acting was, you know, fantastic in that. And I was reading, or I do a lot of reading. I have a lot of old Hollywood books, mostly written by our stars. And it's interesting to hear them tell a certain story and the different from a different angle. In other words, like in this case, Anthony Quinn, who they call Tony Quinn, and he was in that movie. He was Marlon Brando's brother, and I guess they didn't like each other. And in the one scene there where on the couch where his brother is become a
big wheel.
Big wheel and also a kind of a pain, you know.
Yeah,
he'd gone after and grabbed everybody's wives, and he was drinking tequila. And Marlon Brando came in, and they had this big fight. And I heard that they really didn't like each other, and the director kind of steamed him up. I think it was Elia Kazan, wasn't it, that
yes,
directed that one?
That's right. And as a matter of fact, Anthony Quinn won an Academy Award for that role.
Yeah, that's right, he did. And in Anthony Quinn's book, which I have, he talks about it, and he says that they goaded him into that, they didn't have to do much because they were mad at each other anyway, and they just let both of them let this vent, they vented their feelings in that scene where Marlon Brando comes in and starts bawling out his brother,
grabbing him, getting very physical too.
Yeah, hair and the whole thing. And that's a very great story. And
right.
I thought he did that, and in the Wild One too. But Viva Zapata is so much emotion in it.
What do you say we take a break? When we return to Forgotten Hollywood, our special guest, Art LeBeau, discusses his love for the military genre of films, Elvis, and tunes he produced or owns that have appeared in film. Manny Pacheco here. Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History, and Son of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History shares Americana through the eyes of actors who appear under the titles of such iconic movies, such as The Wizard of Oz.
That's a horse of a different color. Come on in.
Casablanca.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
And It's a Wonderful Life.
A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class.
Son of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History was recently a 2013 gold medal recipient from the Reader's Favorite Book Awards, complete with a star-studded ceremony in Miami. You can purchase the entire Forgotten Hollywood book series on Amazon and at independent bookstores, and you can download the first paperback to your virtual library as an ebook for your Kindle, Nook, or on your favorite e-reader through Apple. The Forgotten Hollywood book series is a perfect gift. I invite you to visit ForgottenHollywood.com and pick up a copy of these books today. Now, back to Gary Lycan and Art LeBeau on Forgotten Hollywood.
Talk a little bit about your love of the war movie. I understand, Sergeant York, 12 O'Clock High, Patton, rank
well,
high on
I was
your list.
The military, I was on air transport, naval air transport, but during World War II. But I went to a lot of places where there was just been battles, like Tarawa in the South Pacific, where there so many 50,000 casualties or something on the beach, and the Marines were hiding behind their own dead bodies for cover. It was pretty bad. We were carrying whole plane loads of whole blood to the South Pacific.
Do you think that many of these movies were accurate? I know that 12 O'Clock High ranks very, very large with folks who were in the military for its realism.
Yeah, I mean, the dialogue in there is very, very close to the real thing. Just the attitude where Gregory Peck, they get hit with something and the plane has a little bump and they've been hit, but they're not crashing. And he just kind of says, okay, that's the way pilots would talk. Okay, settle down.
I'm going to shift gears on you here, Art, because obviously you have a tremendous love, and I think we hit upon this earlier, of artists who also sang but were all movies, and one of the most influential artists to perform in movies was Elvis.
Yeah.
What did Elvis do for you in all the different genres of movies? And
well, the first thing he did for me is practically make my show when I came on the air. Was first to play him out here, and
right.
And nobody else was playing Elvis but me. And of course, he was hot. Nobody had caught on yet, and all the girls were going crazy in the Elvis Presley fan club, and I had a fan club there, and I was on the air for Coca-Cola, and I had 5,000 people in my fan club, and Coca-Cola asked me how many I had, and I said 5,000. They said, you're going to have 50,000, and I laughed. I said, It can't be. And they were right, because they got behind it, and they were giving away prizes every day, and I was on every day, and I won their contest. Coca-Cola did a contest in all the 40 major cities in the United States, and they did their own survey, and they picked a disc jockey from each city. They went to, like, drive-in movies. They went to drive-in restaurants. They went to what was Pacific Ocean Park there, which had kind of, Disneyland was just coming into play. They went there. They did their own survey. They asked one question: who's your favorite disc jockey in each city? And whoever won would be the spokesman for Coca-Cola for that era. And so Coca-Cola, we were giving away cases of Coke. We were giving away watches. We were giving away radios. They were. And I wound up with 50,000 members in the Art LeBeau Coca-Cola Hi-Fi Club.
Wow.
It was a big deal.
Now, you got to work with Elvis, obviously, and deal with Elvis intimately, right?
No, I wouldn't say intimately, Manny. I tried to get an interview with him, and, you know, they laughed at me because I went to RCA, and the regional director of promotion said, it's impossible. No, this would be when he came out here to do Love Me Tender.
Right.
And she said, it's impossible. Nobody can get an interview with Elvis. And I said, well, nothing's impossible. She said, well, that is. I said, listen, Dottie. It was Dottie Vance. She was their regional RCA vice president of promotion on the West Coast. I said, listen, I play 15 minutes of Elvis every day and the Elvis Presley fan club. And I said, I don't ask you for anything. I've never accepted anything from you. And I said, now I'm asking you for a favor. I want to get an interview with Elvis. I said, who can get me an interview with Elvis? She says, only one person. She said, that's Colonel Parker. I said, well, then give me Colonel Parker's phone number. And she says, I can't do that. I said, do you have it? She said, yes. I said, then I want it. And she, I'm looking eyeball to eyeball with her, and she says, if I give it to you, you can never say where you got it. I said, I'll never say where I got it. Scout's honor.
Well, you just said it today, but that's okay, right?
What's that?
Well, you got it.
Oh, yeah, I got it, and I called Colonel Parker.
Wow.
And Colonel Parker, I said, my name is Art LeBeau. I'm a disc jockey in the West Coast here, and I'd like to have an interview with Elvis. Well, he says, going to be able to do that. And I said, I'm not just speaking for myself. I'm speaking for the Elvis Presley fan clubs, and they want me to get this interview. And I play the Elvis 15 minutes every day. Nobody's even hardly playing Elvis out here. Oh, he says, well, that's very nice of you, and we appreciate that. I said, why couldn't I have an interview with Elvis? He says, first of all, we don't let Elvis do any live interviews. I said, why is that? He says, well, because we don't know what he's going to say. I said, well, let's do a taped interview then. He says, tapes can be edited. You can make him say anything. So I says, well, I take it then the answer is, you know, a real big no. And he said, well, I'm afraid that's the way it's going to be. And I said, well, before I go, Colonel Parker, I'm not trying to be a wise ass or anything. I said, you know, you're a businessman, and I'm a businessman, and Elvis is important business to me, just like he is to you. So what I'm going to do is, when I go on the air tomorrow, I'm going to talk about this conversation, and I'm going to say that you turned down the Elvis Presley fan club. And I said, there's 50,000 members here in Los Angeles. And I'd say, he says, well, that would be a very unfortunate thing for you to do. And I said, well, I'm not doing it to be spiteful. I said, but I have to get myself off the hook. And there was a long pause. And he says, do you know a lady named Dottie Vance? I said, yeah, I know who she is. She's the vice president of RCA out here. He says, well, don't you do anything for a couple of days. And he says, and I'll have her get back to you. So about 2 days later, she comes walking in with a 7-inch tape in her hand, carrying it like a platter of something, and shaking her head, walking down the hall. She says, "I don't know how you did it, but here's your interview." And I said, "Well, how can that be my interview? I didn't do it." She says, "Colonel Parker took a tape recorder on the set of Love Me Tender and pretended he was you, and he wants you to put your voice in where he asks the questions."
Oh, my gosh.
Which I did. And I gave it, and I edited it myself. And unfortunately, sometimes when you're doing things, you don't document them very well. So all of his questions, when he was asking, were on the cutting room floor. They just, I just cut them, threw them away. And I gave the interview to Coca-Cola, and they put it on all the 40 stations that they were on.
Wow.
And I don't have that interview right now. I lost the tape somewhere, but I put it on the air, of course, and gave it to Coca-Cola, and they were thrilled. So
wow.
That's my Elvis story.
That's great.
I saw him a few other times. I saw him a year before he died. He had me in his suite at the International. That was about 1976. Six, yeah, when I had the when I was at KRLA, when you were there.
Right.
And he shared his some stuff with me. There were 100 people in the suite there, and somehow or other, he came over and started talking to me. He didn't know me that well, but he knew me, and he had a book on self-realization. He preached to me for about a half hour about self-realization, and it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a fabulous story.
You know me, Manny. You ask me a short question, you get a long answer.
And you know what? You're the best interview for that.
That's right.
We love that.
Yeah, you don't want those interviews where they say, "Did you know Frank Sinatra?" They say, "Yeah."
Yep. And that's it.
No.
They give you the Gary Cooper answer. Let's take a trip to our movie auditorium to hear more Elvis in a couple of motion pictures on Forgotten Hollywood.
They call me poor boy, poor boy, poor boy, but I ain't lonesome and I ain't blue, 'cause I could never be a poor boy as long as I've got a darling like you. Ain't got a crust, ain't got a cent, can't buy a jug, can't pay the rent. I got a heart full of dreams and a lot of memories, and that's enough for me. They call me poor boy, poor boy, poor boy, but I ain't lonesome and I ain't blue, 'cause I could never be a poor boy as long as I've got a darling like you. Can't buy a house, can't buy a lot, ain't got a bean, ain't got a pot, but what I got is a heart full of love and memory, and that's enough for me. They call me poor boy, poor boy, poor boy, but I ain't lonesome and I ain't blue, 'cause I could never be a poor boy as long as I got a darling like you. Have a pig, don't have a cow, I don't have a horse to pull a plow, but what I got is a heart full of love and memory, and that's enough for me. They call me poor boy, poor boy, poor boy, but I ain't lonesome and I ain't blue, 'cause I could never be a poor boy as long as I got a dolly like, I got a dolly like, I got a dolly like you.
Give us a room with a view of the beautiful Rhine. Give us a room with a view of the beautiful Rhine. Give me a muddy old creek in Texas any old time. I got those 1, 2, 3, 4 occupation GI blues. From my GI hat to the heels of my GI shoes. And if I don't go stateside soon, I'm gonna blow my fuse.
We'll get hoss and pfeffer and black pumpernickel for chow. We get hoss and pfeffer and black pumpernickel for chow. I blow my next month's pay for a slice of a Texas cow. We'd like to be heroes, but all that we do here is mark. We'd like to be heroes, but all that we do here is march. And they don't give the purple heart for a fallen arch. I got to hop to three for a occupation G.I. Blues. From my G.I. hat to the heels of my G.I. shoes. And if I don't go stateside soon, I'm gonna pull my fuse. The fall lines are pretty as flowers, but we can't make a pass. The fall lines are pretty as flowers, but we can't make a pass. Cause they're always signs saying keep a tear off the grass. I got to hop to G.I. Blues. From my G.I. hat to the heels of my G.I. shoes. And if I don't go stateside soon, I'm gonna blow my fuse. Occupation G.I. Blues. Occupation G.I. Blues. Occupation G.I. Blues.
Ready. How about any music you've produced that's been selected for film or television?
I never produced any movies at all.
But you produced music that's turned out.
Lots of that.
Right.
Lots of that. And we had we were able to get movies for television. What happened, and also for movies, we were able to get songs for movies,
right,
and songs for television, and that became part of our business in the 90s. It was a big part of our business. It happened after American Graffiti, mm-hmm, when we furnished American Graffiti with some music.
Was one of the songs the one you owned, Since I Don't Have You?
Yes, uh-huh. And then I also helped George Lucas get a hold of Roulette and pointed him in some other directions, mm-hmm, so he could get music for American Graffiti. Then after that, American Graffiti was the first movie to use a lot of music from records. It was done extensively now and all the way back after that period, after 1972, when American Graffiti came out.
But you kind of pioneered that whole thing.
Well, yeah, not on purpose, so it just sort of happened.
Sure.
Like a lot of things. I talked to a lot of people in Hollywood. They'll all tell you, you know, that how much what pertains to luck and being the right place, the right time. And I even heard Clint Eastwood on an interview talk about how much of his success was luck.
Right, right.
You know, but then if luck comes along and you take advantage of it, then that's the difference between, you know, one person or another. And a person should not be shy about saying, oh, you know, they're not completely lucky. I mean, but there's some luck involved.
Well, was it Branch Rickey of the Dodgers who once said luck is the residue of design? That it's actually, if you're in the right place at the right time, luck's going to happen, and it's a good thing?
It's a good thing. Luck happens, but sometimes it just sails by. You don't do anything about it. I mean, that happened to me also.
Right, right.
I think it might have been a very good move, but then as things worked out, it all worked out pretty well. But I did pass up some things, and I had opportunities.
From Art's Oldies But Goodies collection of records and featured in a number of pictures, including American Graffiti, The Skyliners, and Since I Don't Have You, on Forgotten Hollywood.
Fond desires, and I don't.
LeBeau discusses his latest projects, including sold-out concerts and his long-running Killer Oldies Request and Dedication program. Obviously, you still reach a large, loyal audience, all ages, diversity, decades of success. I mean, you pretty much set what Southern California demographics were in terms of the rise of the Hispanic market. I mean, there's a lot of things that you have influenced in Southern California and Los Angeles in particular.
Yeah, including you.
Yes, including you're absolutely right.
Well, I can't be right all the time.
You were going to UCLA and got out of UCLA.
And you plucked me right out of there.
Well, you plucked us. You came over to KRLA, I guess, and you're talking to Jack or Laura and we gave you a job, and you did great.
Well, yeah, but you kept pushing me, and you kept giving me some great advice. And gosh, I really don't want to talk about me, but yes, you're right. You're right about that. But even today, now, I mean, now that was 30 years ago, but today you're so relevant. I mean, the folks of all ages know Art LeBeau. I mean, it doesn't matter if they're in their teens, if they're preteens, or if they're in their 50s or 60s. They know who you are, and you remain so relevant by keeping, I guess, the pulse of what music's all about in Southern California.
We did a concert on September 10th at San Manuel Amphitheater. We did 16,000 people, and that was exciting. On the big Art LeBeau 20th anniversary of my Sunday night show, and I was real excited about that. It's always exciting to know to have something going today and to have the future look good, and that's the way it looks right now.
Gary Lycan and I would like to thank the ever-relevant Art LeBeau for sharing his personal thoughts about his love for Hollywood. And by the way, Art has a star on the Walk of Fame along Highland Avenue and Hollywood Boulevard, which he received on July 17, 1981. On January 30, 2009, he was honored with Pacific Pioneer Broadcaster's Diamond Circle Award, given to members who have made an important contribution to the development of broadcasting during their 75-plus years. And the Art LeBeau Foundation provides annual scholarships to 9 LA and Fresno area high schools, as well as supporting other charitable organizations as the Wildlife Way Station and the American Humane Society. Art LeBeau is the man. Many thanks to our producer, Steve Guzman. We hope you join us next week for another edition of Forgotten Hollywood. And remember, let's never forget. I'm Manny Pacheco.